The U.S. men's national team is on fire, ranked number 2 in the world, and they're coming to Charleston, West Virginia for the Men's Continental Championship from September 5th through the 10th. This is your only chance to watch them live in the U.S. before they head to Tokyo, Japan for the Olympic qualifier. Watch the U.S. take on powerhouses like Cuba and Canada as they battle for the championship. It's an action-packed event you can't afford to miss. Get your tickets now at usavolleyball.org.
Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball. This is episode 71 of the show, of the podcast. How are you doing, Clarence?
Doing good, doing good. My body's a little sore. Just got back into town after playing in a grass tournament in Lake Tahoe. But other than
that, nice. Yeah, how'd that go? Good.
I didn't play my best volleyball, if I'm being honest. But Lake Tahoe is beautiful. Oh my gosh, it is such a vibe there. The vibes are right; they're just right. But if I'm saying that correctly, but it's a really great tournament. It was reverse co-ed doubles, which is pretty cool too, on the grass. So. A lot of fun there. Body's hurting, but we're moving along. How you doing? How was your weekend?
Doing well, yeah. Weekend was good. Kind of the final prep, countdown for maybe to arrive.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I feel like we are in a good spot, ready for him to get here. We kind of finished off all the major items on our to-do list this weekend and have a couple more just kind of smaller, more like nice to have done before than, you know, items that we're working through. But feeling good. I don't know. Can't believe we're here already.
We'll be on standby waiting for an interview. I'm like, Steven, how do you feeling? Big moment here.
Sleep. Just step outside of the hospital room. Yeah.
Chester's got to be on it too. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But this, for the listeners here, this will be my final episode for a while. I'll be gone for 6 weeks on paternity leave, but we'll be back and feeling, I was about to say feeling refreshed. I don't know if I'll be feeling that refreshed, but I'll be eager to get back to the podcast when I return for sure.
Mm-hmm. I believe that when we see it.
No, that's right. Yeah. How's coaching going? You just kind of kicked off tryouts, right? Is that right?
Not yet. So Okay. Actually, dating everything to today, we actually have our first day of tryouts, first of 3 days, actually. So this is going to be like the first tryout we're doing with the new system that we're just trying to really implement and create a new, let's just say, encouraging, accountable culture there over at Banning too. So I'm very excited for tryouts today, and I'm also very nervous. It's gonna be a rough 3 day not a rough 3 day sorry it's gonna be a very 3 days worth of processing, I'll say, and then teams will be announced on Friday for our program. So I'm excited, but I'm also nervous because I know sometimes, you know, you got to make those hard decisions depending on numbers and, you know, unfortunately cut people. So if that comes down to it, that'll be an unfortunate job I have to do as well. But I mean, I'm excited overall.
Definitely a tough job. Yeah. But excited to hear you kind of establishing that new culture and trying to get that buy-in at the front of the season. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Last week we had our parents meeting and I went, for those of you who know the movie, I went full Coach Carter mode and everybody, create contracts, everybody. I'm like, accountability is our best friend this season.
Love we're that.
It all cohesively together.
That's cool.
And nobody complained. No, I got no complaint from parents. They were like, he's got a point. All right. I saw like, you know, those like little slight head tilts. We're like, all right. Interesting. So hopefully that's good, but we're rolling into the tryout. So
Overall, good job, parents. Yeah, on buying in there. Because, yeah, you mean, parents are a big part of the team, too.
Very big. Very big.
And, you know, they're with their kids when they're not on the court, too. So, you know, they got to help them buy into the system, too. So, yeah, great to hear. That's exciting. And good luck with trials, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll keep you guys updated. But, yeah, big 7-1. We're almost still out of
7-1. Yeah. crack the 30 left. Yeah. 30 left to get there. But, we have a, what was that?
29.
What's better than 30?
New girl.
29.
Like, I gotta watch New Girl now.
Schmidt.
You know, I think I turn 29 next year. I might have a 29 themed birthday party. We'll see.
I haven't seen the Barbie movie yet, but I did see, and I really want to, I did see a meme of, I think Ken was wearing a, like, kind of a Western attire.
Okay,
type thing.
I heard about this.
They looked back at a New Girl episode where Schmidt was wearing the exact same Western shirt. And yeah, it said like Schmidt Ward Burst or, you know,
yeah,
that I thought that was funny.
I'm not on that TikTok, but I heard it was going crazy in the community where it's like Schmidt Ward Burst, blah, 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 blah. So like, yeah, that'll be, I haven't watched it either, but I definitely have to watch that.
Somehow the New Girl wardrobe ended up on the set of Barbie, it seems. No, that's funny. Yeah, I still need to see New Girl. I really want to see, or not New Girl. I still really want to see Barbie. Not sure if it's going to happen before baby gets here, but maybe we'll have a little movie night when he gets here.
Oh, perfect. There you go. It's all planned out.
There we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into this week's episode. We have an awesome episode, a great conversation with one of our region leaders. But before we get to that, if you haven't listened to our previous episode, we were live-ish episode from the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado, sitting down with members of the boys and girls U19 national teams. We chatted with girls U19 national team head coach Jamie Morrison and girls U19 national team athlete Abby Vanderwall, boys U19 national team head coach Charlie Sullivan, and boys U19 national team athlete Sean Kelly while they were here in town training for the 2023 FIVB U19 World Championship. Which are going on right now. That competition is going on right now. So tune in to that episode and you can learn a little bit more about those individuals as well. The team, you know, how they prepared for the upcoming competition or the competition that's going on right now. Listen now on all podcast platforms or watch this episode and others on USA Volleyball YouTube channel. And now let's get right into it with news with Hughes.
That was a lot to cover. Good job. Great job.
That was a jam-packed episode. A lot of guests on there, but we got it done. And I thought it turned out really well, too.
I'm going to already say good luck toward the end of the show today. with those names, but
my pronunciations, yeah,
yes, exactly.
We'll get there.
we'll get there eventually. With that being said, congratulations to the U.S. Beach National Team pairs of Betsy Flint and Julia Scholes for winning silver, as well as Andy Benish and Miles Partain for winning silver at the 2023 FIVB Beach Pro Tour Montreal Elite 16. Also, congratulations to U.S. Beach National Team pairs Taryn Cloth and Kristen Nuss and Annie Benish and Miles Partain for winning the ABP Atlanta Open over the weekend. Congrats to Beach U19 National Team pairs for bringing home some hardware from the Caribbean Beach Championship. Ty Rodriguez and Jackson Herbert won gold, and Kennedy Coakley and Mariah Massey won silver. Congratulations to you both. A lot of great beach news. Now onto the indoor side of things. The boys and girls U19 national teams are currently competing in the 2023 FIVB U19 World Championship. The girls are currently 6-0 and play Brazil in the quarterfinals Wednesday. And the boys are currently 3-1 and are starting the round 16 today, Tuesday, the time of our recording. Good luck to both of those squads. And the U.S. women's national team is currently 2-0 in the Norseca Pan American Cup at the time of this recording as well. Get your chance to see
the U.S. men's national team compete on home soil one more time. The U.S. men's national team will be competing in Norseca from September 5th through the 10th at the Charleston Coliseum and Convention Center in Charleston, West Virginia. Get your tickets right now. For more information on all the latest news, visit usavolleyball.org.
Great job. A lot of news. A lot of news.
A whole lot of news.
The volleyball just keeps coming. I love it.
Volleypalooza.
Now, for today's show, I teased it at the beginning. We're chatting with Florida Region Executive Director and President Steve Bishop. Let's jump right into it. Here's Steve.
Thank you for giving some time to the All-Star Championships. Behalf of our longtime attendees, we certainly appreciate that. There are quite a few of us. Members of the planning team are Kurt Child from Iowa, Ron Pelham from Arizona, me, Philip Bryan from Gulf Coast, and then Brian Sharkey from Badger Region. Make up the event planning team, and those regions have participated in this event for a long time.
Of course. Yeah, we're excited to have you on and learn more about the event, and of course also learn more about you too when I hear about your background as well. Yeah, thank you for taking the time, Steve. Feel like Absolutely. it's been a while since I've seen you in person, let alone a virtual call, so this is exciting. I know it wasn't the last time, but my memory of you that sticks in my head, that's burned in my head is unfortunately a bad situation where you tore your Achilles during a sitting volleyball tournament at Opens, and you're on the knee skirt.
Columbus 2019. I was playing in the 50 and over men's division and had a real nice
That's right. It wasn't sitting.
Which prevented me from playing sitting.
That's right.
Which makes for an interesting story, because all of the guys over on the sitting court were saying, "Oh, we feel so bad for you. You tore your Achilles. I don't have an arm."
They're like, "Why can't you still play? Come on." I love that. That's awesome.
Once you get to know those guys, pretty rough on you. So.
Yep. And I think the summer after that, I actually was on a knee scooter as well because I broke my ankle. So there we go.
I suspect your field back a whole lot better than mine, because I have semi-retired at this point. So
yeah, it's nice if you're beach. Still playing.
Yeah. I play a little beach when we host the Paravolley camps here in Central Florida, and that's my level. I can hang with them. So.
Awesome. Well, I'd like to kind of kick things off and just kind of learn a little bit more about you. Just, talk to us a little bit about your background and how you were introduced to the game of volleyball.
Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So my volleyball journey started when I was in a gym in Albuquerque, New Mexico, playing basketball. The base volleyball coach for the team, the volleyball team there, saw me in a slam dunk. It was an impromptu slam dunk contest. And he came over and asked me if I played volleyball. And I said, of course I play volleyball, because I had watched my parents play in leagues when I was a kid. So he invited me to the tryouts for the travel team. And of course, I showed up within the first few minutes. I realized I really didn't know how to play volleyball like I thought I did, because they were running offensive and defensive systems and a back row setter and stuff you just don't see in rec league volleyball watching your parents play, right?
Right.
So his name was Amar Chand. He took me under his wing and taught me the game. And that started the journey for me. And I went from being an athlete to a coach, to a club director, to a region administrator, and then all the other great roles that I've gotten to have over my journey. So that's where it all started.
Can you talk about a little bit when you got that kind of first step or introduction or that, beginning journey into being, a region commissioner?
Well, in Florida here, just to make sure our actual commissioner doesn't get her feelings hurt, we have two distinct roles. We have a governance role, which includes leadership of our board chair slash commissioner. And then we have an operations role, and that's the role I hold as executive director and president. I do serve as the principal rep to the RBAA on behalf of our region due to the fact that I am, you know, I oversee the operational side of our region. Our region is a little different than some others in that sense. A couple others have kind of followed suit, you know, after exploring the pros and cons. But for a person who's been in various nonprofits over the years, it's really important from, you know, that you have a governance lane and you have an operational lane. And those two lanes go in the same direction, but they stay where they belong. And that creates the most successful. So for me, that started, another funny story, that started in, 2002. I was on the board of directors here for the Florida region as the assistant commissioner and treasurer, my role I served in for a couple of years. And then I got a job offer, went back to the private sector as a controller and chief financial officer. And I had proposed around 2002 that the Florida region switch from being a board run volunteer organization to a staff run model. And we had 23 board members at the time, and you can imagine how challenging that can get. Mm-hmm. Some of them were not in favor of making the transition because that meant they were going to, you know, kind of cut themselves out of a role. So I went back to the private sector. And then in 2005, the company I was working for, we sold it to a large company, which I won't name. And the region reached out to me and said, hey, we'd like for you to reconsider this position. And I said, well, send me the job description and I'll take a look at it. So they sent me the same job description I had created back in 2002 and asked me if I was interested in applying for a job that I had suggested that they create 3 years earlier. So I did. And I was offered the position. And I said to them at the time, I said, look, I'm kind of busy in some private sector. I just bought a company and I was doing some other stuff. And I said, look, I'll come on board. I'll help you guys for a year. We'll get this thing put together, get your mission statement, your budget, your structure and everything put together. And so I'll commit for a year and then, you know, you guys can take it from there. Well, that was 20 something years ago. So I'm in my 20th 1 year renewal, I guess you would call it. And it's been an interesting journey. And that all happened. I came on board back in the fall of 2005 in this particular role. So it's been a lot of fun. Certainly one of the most enjoyable positions that I've held over all these years in my career. When you get to combine your business skills and your love for the sport of volleyball into the same kind of position, it makes it enjoyable pretty much every day.
Before we get to, thank you for sharing that story. That was awesome. I didn't know that about you either. So thank you for sharing that. Before we get too far into the kind of the weeds of regions, but I want to start up high for everyone listening who might not be familiar with what the regions represent, what they do, you know, on the day to day. Could you give us some of the basics of the Florida region, maybe in particular, just, you know, how many clubs, how many members you have, you know, events that you host year round?
Sure. So Florida region, we serve about 19,000-ish members these days. I think that bumped us up into the number 7 spot overall, which is a great place to be. That means that the programs and the events and services that we provide here are having a positive impact, and we're seeing continued growth. When I first came on in 2005, we had a little over 4,200 members. So we've gone from that 4,200 to over 19,000 in that particular time span. And I attribute that to a lot of things. One is the interest in the sport, no doubt. I think the region's mindset and ability to create good programming and good support so that the clubs can continue to grow. They're doing all the work out in the local communities. We're just trying to piece it all together and make sure everybody's playing off the same set of rules. We have about 154 clubs here in Florida, and I think it's somewhere around 1,350 teams between the ages of 10 year to 18 year. Our adult population is focused mostly on beach volleyball and coaching juniors. We have one annual adult regional championships each year, but it's relatively small compared to how it used to be when I played in it back in the day. And then, you know, we've got about 250 officials across the region that officiate with USA Volleyball. So that's kind of a snapshot of who we are in the sense of numbers and stats.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. What's one of the bigger events that your region hosts specifically that's more notable across the, you know, the country?
Well, I'm going to say it this way because it's actually in the name of it, but it's the ASIC Sport Volleyball Challenge. That happens in April of each year. That's a combination of our regional bid event and our regional championships for the non-bid-seeking teams. We were a little over 700 teams this year in 2023 on 102 courts at the Orange County Convention Center. And so that is by far our largest event on the indoor side. On the outdoor side, our largest event is in partnership with the AVCA. We host the AVCA Small College Beach Championships. And this year, it was once again the largest in the country with 32 colleges participating.
Oh, cool. Well, you mentioned the growth from when you started, and you mentioned, you know, some of the factors that may have contributed to that. What have, you know, maybe in your last few years, keep it more recent, what are some of the successes that you've seen within your region?
I think several things. One is we have a board, as I mentioned earlier, that really understands the difference between governance and operations, and they allow us, you know, they chart the course, we steer the ship kind of thing. And that allows us to kind of maneuver as we need to throughout the year. And so the camaraderie of the staff here in the region office and the, I won't say liberties, but the respect and support that we get from the board has allowed us to be very flexible. And I'm proud of that. Secondly, I would say our scholarship program. We have a high school scholarship program in partnership with one of our great partners here in the Florida region. You may have heard of them, the Norelli Family Foundation. We started this scholarship program in 2007. So as of 2023, we've awarded 278 scholarships to high school seniors to the tune of $736,000.
Wow. Wow. Incredible.
So we're really proud of that. I'd say the success of our clubs at the national level, the number of Florida clubs winning bids at the various JNQs across the country has continued to increase each year. That's a testament to the clubs and the work that they're doing in the local communities. And then that parlays its way over to our all-star program, which we call Team Florida, and the success of that program all the way back to 2000, quite honestly. And so those are some of the highlights, I think, that I would say have attributed to, you know, many of our successes and things that we're very proud of.
What are before we jump into All-Star, I know you mentioned the All-Star, you know, Florida All-Star team being part of that, you know, success, that list of successes that, you know, your region has. But before we jump into, you know, that category of things, what are some of the challenges that you guys face, you know, on the back end when it comes to trying to, you know, maintain the retention that you guys have created within your membership and your events and the growth there?
Well, that's a loaded question. You know, competitive landscape comes to mind. Growth, anytime you have growth can be good, but growth creates challenges, meaning that events are bigger. You all know this, and you have a hard time finding venues that can facilitate the size of your growing events. Growth out in the local communities, same issue, just a different scale, meaning clubs want to grow, but they only have three courts in their gym, and, you know, we can only get so many teams into practice four nights a week. So those are some challenges. Obviously, The continued challenges with managing, we call it case management here. It's probably referred to more commonly as safe sport or incidents, you know, that are reported and take place. Those are constant challenges. Trying to make sure that we're keeping the athletes safe, we're holding the coaches and the officials accountable, and that the standards are the same for everyone. Meaning, if Coach A breaks this rule and Coach B breaks this rule, they both are held to the same standard, and the penalty or the consequence is the same, and it's never altered based on relationships or size of club or all of those types of things that, you know, people whisper on the outside.
But again, before we dive into All-Star Championships, you mentioned the Norelli family, and I just want to give some depth to that a little bit. And it sounded familiar to me, and then Laura reminded me of who the Family Foundation is, but they helped with the Hickory Point Beach Parabolic Training Center. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, they fund $25,000 a year for the beach parabolic program because it's not a World Parabolic IPC sanctioned event yet. And so therefore, USA Volleyball is unable to draw down USOPC funds. So in order for us to keep this moving forward, the foundation stepped up and said, not only will we support your scholarship program and a handful of other things that they do, but they also have supported the beach parabolic training for USA Volleyball. They committed $100,000 for the quad, which will go through 2024. And he's also just recently contributed another fairly significant amount of money to help us go after the beach parabolic world championships in November of 2024. So we're in the middle of that process right now with World Parabolic. And as you all know from producing international level events, they can be quite expensive. So
definitely. Yeah. Thank you for adding to that a little bit. What in you're involved with the beach parabolic program, heavily involved with that in Florida with the Hickory Point Training Center as well. Through your involvement, how's the growth been? How's the, you know, what are some of the successes that you've seen as that program has kind of got off the ground and is growing now?
Well, I'd say some of the most notable successes are we've had two RDEs, which is the recognized development event. That's a event sanctioned. One was sanctioned by the Zone. Joe Campbell is the Zone president out of Texas. And the other was actually a true World Parabolic RDE sanctioned back in December of 22. That's an event we held in conjunction with the AVP event here in Central Florida. So those are really nice successes for the program. Australia came over and played in the event in December of 2022. It's difficult when you have momentum and you're moving toward what you hope is going to be a Paralympic recognized sport. And then when the IPC or the World Parabolic and the IOC and IPC announced that they would not be adding beach parabolic as a sport in 2028, that really kind of set everyone back on their heels just a little bit to try and figure out, you know, what do we do next? The pandemic certainly threw a wrench into that because they had a 2019 World Championships event in Pingtang, China. And then obviously nothing in 2020, 2021. Countries were still unable to travel because of travel restrictions and visa issues with the Department of State here in the U.S. We thought we were going to put something on the board in 22, but then the announcement happened and that kind of stopped that. So we've been waiting on World Parabolic to finish up their visioning of how to make this a Paralympic sport for the 32 games in Brisbane, Australia. So while I will miss, because I plan to retire in 2028, I will miss being at the 2028 games to watch this thing happen. I'll certainly be cheering them on from afar if it comes to fruition in 32.
The way you kind of talked about how, you know, your background when you were going to give the region a year, you know, help get them set up. I won't be surprised if we hit 2032, and we're on another podcast call. Just referencing video about this.
Well, they keep telling me I can't retire because I'll go crazy because I like to stay busy. But
say, so you're going to be bored
right now. That I don't know. I said I'll sit on my front porch and whittle a stick. I don't really care. But
I love that.
First 30 days after I retire, I'm going to get on my motorcycle and go on a cross country motorcycle ride. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, wow. Cool. What kind of bike do you have?
I have a Honda F6B bagger, an 1800cc bike. I ride with the Patriot Guard riders. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. They are all former military, and we do funeral escorts for fallen soldiers and military. We actually even do it for firefighters, police officers.
Oh, wow.
So what happens is the system gets all clogged up. There are so many funerals that take place that the law enforcement can't deal with all of them. So they call on the Patriot Guard riders, and we will do funeral escorts for, we'll pick them up at the airport, maybe coming right off the plane, and transport them either to the National Cemetery or to a funeral hall. We do parades. We do all kinds of stuff. So,
wow, that's really cool. Is your cross country trip going to be with the group or just yourself?
Well, my wife asked me the same question, and I told her I'm not sure yet. If I were taking off tomorrow, it'd just be me, and I just ride until I got tired, and then I pull over and get a room. But I'm not sure. Check back with me.
Is the wife not interested in joining you either?
She would go if I ask her to. But we live on a farm, and we have horses and chickens and goats and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
Both of us disappearing for 30 days probably wouldn't go too well. I'm not sure how they all feed themselves.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, we got to see if he's even actually going to retire, you know. Well,
that's right.
But kind of moving into, thank you for that, by the way. That's a very interesting fact about you. Didn't really know that. But kind of going into the topic of the All-Star Championship, you know, this was the first year, not the first year, but, you know, returning year for, you know, the Regents taking over the All-Star Championship. Overall, can you talk about how the event went?
Sure. Be glad to. It went really well. I think kind of the transition from the HB Championships, as USA Volleyball retired that name and moved to NTDP, National Team Development Program, and then kind of the transition over to the USAB All-Star Championships, I think it was all very timely and worked out quite well. I'd say some key takeaways from the event is just the camaraderie of the regions getting to work together. I mentioned the event planning team at the beginning of the call. We also have an officials planning team that works behind the scenes because we work in conjunction with Patty and the official development team, and we do mentor-mentee type roles and do a lot of training at that event so that the officials find great value in participating. It's an invitation only type thing for officials as well for those regions that are participating. So we had 90 teams this year, 21 delegations that included 20 regions and one international delegation from Canada. 4-day event went quite well. Arizona region won the Region Cup this year. Very proud of them. It's their first win of the Region Cup. It's a lot of fun for these kids. We are going to work diligently on increasing the international participation and getting that back up. I know a lot of countries had, you know, prolonged timeouts after the pandemic where they weren't allowed to travel unless it was for, you know, FIVB or some type of international competition. So the feedback from the event was good. It's really great. It's more like a reunion. I know you guys have been to the U.S. Open many times in your tenure here, and it's a lot of fun to see the same people over and over again at an annual event. And the All-Star Championships, formerly HB Championships, is certainly a continuation of that concept.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something pretty noteworthy. I mean, kind of seeing, and, you know, for myself, meeting a lot of the, you know, region heads and delegates in our, you know, annual May meetings and our October meetings, you know, it's a very formal setting. But then I remember last year in Tulsa, I'm getting a chance to really see you guys in your element and, you know, really see the work you all put into putting those teams together, staffing everything. It's really, you know, building everything from, you know, start to finish and seeing it all the way through, you know, those teams who, that, you know, go to the championships and, you know, win their division, or just the team that are there for the first time and, you know, getting that experience there too. But it's a lot that goes into it too. So it's a really, 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 really great tournament to just see and witness, like you kind of mentioned there.
And the format of the tournament is great. Playing all best 3 out of 5s, no officiating for the teams. All the officials, all 6 positions are provided. Mm-hmm. They play a total, a max of 2 matches a day, which is certainly more of an international or collegiate type model. And the kids, you know, it's an interesting dynamic in the sense that you get 1 practice day and then you go to battle. And, but it's the same for all the teams. And you really get to see how these regions develop the cultures of their program. And, you know, the kids are just having a blast. They just love the fact, first of all, they don't have to officiate. That's probably the highlight of the trip for them. But then they get a chance to play with the best and against the best from other regions. And that's really a lot of fun for them.
You mentioned, you know, hoping to grow, you know, the international side of that event. I know pre-COVID, that was one of my favorite parts of the event, you know, just feeling that international spirit. And, you know, New Zealand would come in and do the haka, you know, before their matches, which I wish was always really cool. And just for, you know, the American kids to be able to experience that international side of the game, which we don't really get to have here, you know, really until the collegiate level when you're playing 3 out of 5. But yeah, could you speak to, you know, maybe that, and then maybe a little bit more of what makes the event special?
Well, you know, there's some traditions in that, in the sense that there's still pre-match gift exchange at the All-Star Championships. And that certainly has an international flavor to it, where the athletes and coaches exchange just a small trinket or a token of something from their home region or home country. That's an important one. The attire guidelines or expectations are elevated, in the sense that all coaches have to be in matching attire. We don't allow flip-flops or shorts or ball caps or things of that nature. So we're trying to continue that look and feel of it having an international, you know, presence or flavor. I would say some of the history about it that's, I think, is important, guys, is we've been working on a history project here, going back and trying to figure out all the facts about it, because the way it was the HP Championships, from 2000 to 2009, this tournament lived on paper, and because there weren't a lot of event management systems that were up and running. So we've got all kind of people looking for results from the archive. Michelle Goodall is looking. We reached out to AJ Joseph, who ran the event for years for USA Volleyball. I even hit up Tom Pingle. He was coaching an RMR team to see if he had any recollections. So we're jotting down notes and trying to capture as much information as we can. What we do know is between the years of 2000 and 2023, it's been held in 10 cities. That's 23 competitions there. Fort Lauderdale is leading with 8. And then I guess the next closest one behind that will be Tulsa, Oklahoma with 3. And next year we return to Des Moines, Iowa. That'll put Des Moines, Iowa at 3 as well.
Yeah, Des Moines was actually my first one that I went to. So that's really cool. I actually really enjoyed that city. So
yeah, Des Moines rolls out the red carpet. They really enjoy hosting that event. And we'll be going back there next year in July. And then in October of this year, we'll vote on our 2025 destination city for that event.
Got it. What was the kind of inspiration of, you know, kind of going back and looking at the history of the event, you know, making those contacts, like you mentioned? What was the kind of the inspiration, motivation to finding all that information out?
Well, twofold, perhaps. One is it just didn't exist anywhere in a singular location. It was just fleeting thoughts, or someone thought they remembered where we were on this particular year and who won the tournament that year, who won the region cup and things of that nature. And then secondly, to kind of have a portfolio to hand off to the cities and to that are bidding, and then to the host that are hosting the event, so that we have a better ranking system overall. We have good results. We know right now that 32 of the 40 regions have participated between the years of 2010 and 2023. We're hoping that we'll uncover a few more in that list of the remaining eight that may have participated 2009 and before. You kind of get a sense for, you know, which regions are participated the longest. Right now, I think that comes down to Florida and Iowa from the early days, all the way back to 2001. This was started by the Intermountain region, interestingly enough, back in those days. And it started off in Colorado Springs, and it was called the Colorado Cup. That was the original name for this event. And then we haven't yet exactly figured out what year it switched from the Colorado Cup to the HB Championships, but Bingo's trying to jingle his brain a little bit, see if he can remember that as well. But it's just interesting. And, you know, on a side note here, I think we need to do a better job of telling the history of our game. And, you know, my affiliation with the International Volleyball Hall of Fame, yep. I have the same expectations there. And you probably have noticed that the Hall of Fame is trying to do a much better job of promoting its history and its position in the world with respect to being the birthplace of volleyball. And something as simple as just this event, I think, is the same way. We just need to do a better job. Like, if parents show up at the All-Star Championships for the first time, they generally have no idea what's going on. They don't know who won last year. They don't know how many times. They don't know what cities it's been in. They don't know who the leading challenge, you know, the leading regions are, or the regions with the biggest rivalries. They don't know any of that stuff. And so we want to do a better job of packaging that up, making it available. Could be in the manual for the event, could be in a bulletin. We started a new thing this year where we did an event bulletin heading up to the event, and then we did one a couple times during the event, just to kind of the one pager, just some things to keep in mind, top of mind, you know, discussion items or things that we needed people to focus on. But it's just important that we do a better job of telling our story. I ask trivia when I do our All-Star Championships or camps here in Florida for Team Florida. I'll ask these kids things like, name one person that was on the 84 men's gold medal team. Just complete crickets, nothing.
Yeah.
I ask him, what's the oldest age division that an adult can play volleyball with USA Volleyball? They're guessing 55, and I'm thinking, I'm over 55. I'm consulting. So I do these things because I think we just need to do a better job of dialing people. And I ask them where the birthplace of the sport is. Hardly a single person knows the answer to that question. And that's just troubling if it's a sport that you really love to be a part of.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And not only just to pass down that information, the history of the game, but I think it'll help grow the game too, as well. Especially, you know, as kids watch the Olympics, they'll know who that player is. It's on the court, and they'll remember that and pass that on. So, yeah, that's very important, and I think we can all do a better job of trying to pass down that history.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're trying to do a little bit of it here, so hopefully it'll catch on.
I think that's a really good segue into just talking about the volleyball community as a whole. And, you know, I think that's a really good, you know, point to identify,
I think that's something I definitely need to consider, continue to consider as I, you know, run the adult nationals and, you know, have these, you know, age old players at the age of 70. You know, if I can do what they do, what I, you know, one day turn, you know, 70, but, you know, help
as you're coaching
the,
as you're coaching too, Clarence.
Bad
to trivia. Do some bad trivia practice.
Oh, gosh. I'd grow the condition all day if they didn't. But, we should talk about that. All these newer club players coming in at the, you know, 18, 19, 20 year olds, club age range, and you know they don't know the history behind the event, and that's just a really good point to identify. But again, it's kind of connecting back to the volleyball community. It's very large but yet very, very, very connected. What is a good thing about, excuse me, I just got an email, kind of threw me off there. What's a good thing about the community as a whole that you've noticed as a, you know, participant and a leader and an influence as well in the sport of volleyball?
Well, I have been a member of USA Volleyball now for 36 years, and I would say the thing that I've enjoyed the most is the relationships and friendships that have developed over that 36 years. Here in Florida, we refer to it as a lifetime sport with a lifetime of friendships. That's one of our taglines. And I think it really resonates with me because when I mentioned Ahar Chan, who's now passed, got me started in this sport. Many years later, I would see him once a year. He became a referee after he finished coaching. And I would see him at one of the national championships, oftentimes the U.S. Open when I was playing there. And we would visit and talk about the past, and then we'd bump into somebody else because I started in some country region. And so I still have friends there from the old days back in 1987 when I got started. And so we still see each other. And even though we only see each other once a year, it's like a lifelong friendship that, you know, just keeps going. That's the one thing. I refer to this as a big, small community or a big, small family, meaning it is big, but you tend to have kind of like a church concept. You have your own little groups of people that you, you know, you visit with on a regular basis, or you can confide in, or you spend time with. You know, I've been going to annual meetings for 22 years, I guess it is. I've only missed two in all of those 22 years, and that's we have two a year. And while we still tend to all talk about the same thing over and over, it's still fun to get together and see each other and, you know, kind of compare notes and see how things are going and where we can improve and how we can make this whole entire journey a little bit better. So I attribute probably my number one memory and takeaway are, you know, all the times that we get to spend together at various events and the All-Star Champs, the U.S. Open, the annual meetings, things of that nature, create some lifelong friendships. I mean, to take it even a step bigger, as part of my role with the International Volleyball Hall of Fame, you end up with friends all over the world. Volleyball friends all over the world. And so that's pretty special.
Yeah, the Open Championships, and we've had episodes of the podcast dedicated to the Open Championships, and say it every time. It's like it's a family reunion is really what it comes down to. And you see it when you go there, and it's a lot of fun. One year when I played, I wasn't the one organizing the team, but the guy who was, we needed a couple more players, so he's picking up some free agents and just happened to pick up one of my college teammates.
Oh, wow.
From like 5 or 10 years ago, and just completely random. He was like, oh, do you know this guy, Jonathan? I was like, oh, yeah, played college with him. That's so funny. Random. But yeah, such a fun event and a big family reunion. So, yeah, definitely echo what you said. A big community, but, you know, a small connected community as well. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Kind of going into, we talked a little bit about the growth of the game and specifically in your region, but who specifically in your region is, you know, behind the scenes doing all that work to grow the game within Florida?
Well, I'd have to go back to an earlier comment about our club directors here in Florida. They do a lot of the heavy lifting, if not most of it, in their local communities. And, you know, some are doing it full time and it's a job for them. Some are doing it part time and they have other jobs and they do this on the side. There's a mix of both of those still. I think the number of big clubs or clubs that provide full-time salaries and have buildings and things of that nature continues to grow, and not only here in Florida, but I think across the country. We've seen, you know, recently the for-profit sector kind of focus on youth sports and kind of come into the market a little bit. And try and capture a percentage of the market share. And that's to be expected when you've got a successful business opportunity for the for-profit sector to lean in a little bit and see if there's a lane for them. For the sake of here in Florida, you know, I go back to two groups, the club directors and our board of directors. Those two groups of folks allow us here in the region office to run as fast as we can possibly run to set them all up for success.
Is there a, just out of curiosity, is there a club, a specific club that might be, you know, doing great work in Florida that maybe some other clubs around the country could kind of mimic and maybe do some of that same work in their own region?
Yeah, I'm going to point to all 154 of them. You're not going to trap me like that. So.
I knew as soon as it was coming out, I was like, he's not going to answer this. He can't pick favorites.
I run two political campaigns here. You don't have to close them.
Well-trained, well-answered as well. Well, on that note, Why should a parent of a young athlete consider getting their volleyball, getting their child involved, you know, in the sport of volleyball? Not only that, but, you know, within the Florida region, if they're, you know, along those lines.
Well, you know, the one thing that I tell people when I talk to them in person is, and I just did a interview yesterday with someone to talk about this for athletic directors at the school level, and they were asking me some questions about, you know, USA Volleyball. Why is that important? And I said, well, you have to understand a couple things. One is the premier athlete safeguards in the youth sports space. And I've been here since we started all of this stuff, such as we had implemented background screens and on ourselves before the USOPC ever asked for them and before the U.S. Center for Safe Sport was ever born. We were one of the first organizations to mandate that officials have background screens because they had command and control over youth teams and could give direction to them. And, you know, kids would be afraid not to follow those directions. So athlete safeguards is number one to me. Understanding the, how would I say this, kind of the overall picture, meaning NGB sports, national governing body sports, are governed by the USOPC. There's an oversight function and component. There are audits on a regular basis. They have specific expectations and requirements for background screens nationwide. And while all of that sounds very boring and business-like, it's very true when it comes down to the rubber hitting the road and there being a risk management-related issue or an allegation of any abuse, physical, emotional, or sexual, and how the organization is going to deal with that. USA Volleyball and the NGBs are going to step up and deal with it. Perhaps some of our competitors may not, because they don't have the infrastructure and they don't have the oversight components in place to make sure that people are being held accountable when necessary. So that's probably my best answer on that particular topic. And like I said, well, boring answer, no doubt. And some people have a hard time wrapping their mind around it. But when it really will matter, when a situation arises and how that situation is handled can be quite different.
Staying on topic of growing the game, from the official side, you know, through, in your opinion, through your experience at all levels of the game of volleyball, why should, you know, a former player or even a parent of a player want to be involved as an official or become an official?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I'll answer it this way first, and then I'll get back to the real answer. I had a region tell me recently that they have little cards, business cards, that they carry in their pockets at their events. So when a parent decides they want to start berating the official, the first thing they do is hand them a business card, and that business card is challenging them to become an official since they seem to know so much. So
that's great.
that's the funny answer, but
right,
you know, you're going to be in the gym anyway, and some parents make that transition or make that move because it helps subsidize their trip to the tournament, and you know, they can ask, I'd like to be off on the AM wave so I can watch my son or daughter play, and then I could be available in the afternoon wave, things of that nature. So it helps them because then they know the rules, and when you know the rules, you can be a better spectator, you can be a better coach, you can, you know, just enjoy the game more. We jokingly, a couple times, had parents sitting in the stands yelling at officials, and I'll stand behind them, and then they realize that I'm there, and then they'll turn around and they'll say, "Oh, sorry." And I'm like, "Okay, so you know you're not supposed to be doing that, first of all."
Right. Yeah.
They're like, "Yeah, but it's okay." They're like, "It's okay to razz the official." I said, "No, it's really not." I said, "They're working right now." I said, "But let's put it this way. Let's assume it's Monday morning, 9 o'clock. You're sitting at your desk, and you take a phone call, and you've got one of these officials standing over your left shoulder screaming in your ear about how horribly you answer the phone or that you don't know your subject matter." I said, "How would that go with you?" They're like, "Yeah, okay, I get it now."
You just gave me a good idea for a volleyball promo. Respect our officials.
It'd be a good Saturday Night Live skit.
That's hilarious. That's awesome.
You know, I think parents getting involved in their kids' game. I know in some little leagues they require parents. You have to officiate in one of the roles on the field if your kid's going to play at some point. And they probably do that to save money more than anything else. But I think it helps the parents understand the rules a little bit better, because we live in a busy society, and expecting parents just to review the rules for fun, certainly not going to happen. And so then you've got we refer to them as the power parent, who's on the bench telling the rest of them what they think the rule is, when in fact that's probably really not that close to being the rule at all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, like you said, kind of making your own schedule is a benefit of becoming an official, and helping pay for your, you know, your son or daughter's club, team, and dues and all that. I think those are great.
You get a free hotel room. Yeah. You get a free, or at least a free bed, while your kid's playing, and you're making a few bucks. You may have paid for your trip and your food, and you break even, and you got to see your kid play ball, and it's all good.
Yeah. Get to travel some cool places too. So, yeah.
And it's good for college kids. We encourage college kids to get certified and officiate club tournaments in their areas on the weekends. I tell them it's a great alternative to working at a fast food restaurant, you know, 5 nights a week or something. You stay focused on your school. You do your homework, and then work at a juniors tournament on the weekend. You can make the same amount of money in 2 days as if you were working all week at a fast food restaurant or a department store. So sometimes the light bulb goes off and they realize, "Wow, man, I didn't think of that."
Yeah. I sold it for me. Yeah. Steve, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. Is there anything else that we kind of left on the table that you'd like to share or talk about before we let you go here?
Not that I could think of. I'd just probably wrap by saying it's just been a very interesting journey for me, and I could not be more proud of my staff here and the work that they do every day. I tell people often that they run through a wall for me if I ask them to. I don't know if they do it twice, but they certainly do it the first time. And they're just there's absolutely great group. And you know, we produce between indoor and beach somewhere between 30 and 40 events a year, which sometimes doesn't leave many weekends that we're not somewhere. I've been trying to scale that back a little bit. So next year, I think we're going to get that down to 20 or 24, which will be kind of nice. But, you know, nobody succeeds by themselves. And so I always want to make sure that this group's getting some credit, because you don't hit the milestones or the things that we've been able to accomplish as a one-person show. It's just not possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for all you and your staff, all the volunteers, club directors, clubs, everyone in Florida to help grow the game. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Thanks. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
A little focused on Florida and the All-Star Champs. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Of course. Well, we'll get you on the books for 2032. All right. All right, take care.
From my motorcycle.
There's a podcast episode. Yeah. Never been done before.
From my motorcycle. All right.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
See you guys. Bye.
Such a great conversation with Steve. I love having our regional leaders on our podcast. We did those episodes back in December/January. We recorded them in December. But we had those interviews with our regional leaders then and just got to learn a little bit more about, you know, the day-to-day, what they do, you know, the successes, the challenges in each of their regions. And it was great to hear Steve kind of talk about that within the Florida region as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I personally really love his motorcycle hobby and what they do.
Yeah.
And a lot of the just volunteer efforts that the group does for, you know, the first responders around, I don't want to say around the area, but, you know, in his region, I guess, you know, around Florida. It was just really, really, really cool.
Yeah. Learning a little bit more about them as well as, you know, people, you know, what they do, their interests, their hobbies. I've known Steve for quite a while, as long as I've been at USA Volleyball, and I had no idea about that. So that was really cool to hear about that. And hopefully he enjoys that cross country motorcycle ride. That's going to be a lot of fun when he retires, if that day ever comes.
I know. He says he will. Like he said, he was supposed to. Excuse me. Like you said, he was supposed to do his career role temporarily for a little bit of time. Now look at him, like, over, what'd he say, 20 years later?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's can't get away. They keep getting him back in there.
Like, that's how you know he's doing what he loves, you know? Well,
that's right. Yeah. And I think that's just, a testament to, he's just got a passion for it. Passion for volleyball, passion for serving the region and all those clubs and everything, and just, you know, growing the game, like we talked about with him within the Florida region. And just hearing about his involvement with the para side of things too.
Yeah.
Beach para volley. You know, they're trying to grow that sport, that discipline, and hopefully, you know, here soon we'll, you know, the next, you know, couple quads or so, we'll get that into the Paralympics event, get that discipline into the Paralympics event.
Yeah.
That's, you know, this go around wasn't successful, but, even from that moment, hearing that news, the sport has grown and the program has grown itself already. And he's got some good things on the horizon as well with some competitions coming up, which is going to be really cool to see.
Mm-hmm. I know our indoor event season may be done and, you know, beach championships are also wrapped up on the junior side of things, but we are still on our busy season. So, I mean, once again, Steve, thank you so much for coming on our show. As we know, membership season is also approaching, and that is a tornado of a season as well, in the best way possible. But we appreciate you taking the time just to chat with us out of your busy schedule. You guys can reach out to Steve or visit floridavolleyball.org to become a member of the Florida region and also find a club near you. You can also visit usavolleyball.org/membership if you're looking to become a member and get started competing. There you'll find what region you belong to and what clubs are within your areas.
Now, on to upcoming events.
I love that dramatic pause.
Dramatic pause.
You get ready because you're going to need it.
I think I was, take a sip of water, taking a little deep breath. My mic was muted too, so I had to unmute my mic. Here we go. Rick. Now on to upcoming events. We have the FIVB U19 Girls World Championship in Croatia and Hungary, August 1st through the 11th. The FIVB U19 Boys World Championship in Argentina, August 2nd through the 11th. The Norseco Women's Pan American Cup in Puerto Rico, August 6th through the 13th. The Norseco Men's Pan American Cup in Guadalajara and Jalisco, Mexico. The FIVB U21 Women's World Championship, August 17th through the 26th in León and Aguascalientes, Mexico. The Norseca Women's Pan American Cup Final 6, August 19th through the 27th in the Dominican Republic. How am I doing so far?
Thumbs, you could be better.
Doing good.
Here we go on to the beach tour events. We have the National Beach Referee Course in Manhattan Beach, August 17th, one day, in Manhattan Beach, California. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour, SSOVA August St. Pete Beach Regional Qualifier, August 20th in St. Pete Beach, Florida. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour, North Texas Region, Mad Sand Regional Qualifier, August 20th in Plano, Texas. Good luck to everyone competing in those events. Shout out to all the USAB regions for setting up and hosting those events. Also, continued good luck to our U19 boys and girls national teams who are currently competing in the 2023 FIVB World Championship. More details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org.
Oh, he's now, not done yet.
It's not over yet. On to the pro side of things. We have the Beach Pro Tour Elite 16 in Hamburg, August 16th through the 20th in Hamburg, Germany. We have the Beach Pro Tour Futures, August 17th through the 20th in Bujumbura, Burundi. I apologize if I mispronounced that. You can email us at the USAB show at usab.org and leave us feedback on that. And finally, the Beach Pro Tours Futures, August 17th through the 20th in Kaidan, China. There we go. That's the end of our events.
I just love how you just like pause and you just thought about it. You're like, let's clarify.
All right. Mispronounce any of those countries, those cities, please email us at the USAB show at usab.org. You can also leave us a 5-star review and just let us know, give us the phonetic pronunciation of those.
Yeah, also email Stephen personally at Stephen.Munson at usab.org. Let him know.
There we go. Yeah.
just a reminder, listeners, you can always rate, review, leave us feedback on how we're pronouncing or mispronouncing important names here. You can share this podcast with your friends, families, teammates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Shout out to the movie Split. Love that movie there. But it really helps this podcast grow and reach new listeners. And check out our video episodes on our website in YouTube. We thank you all for your continued support. If you know a club, this should be featured or a story you'd like to hear us talk about or share on the podcast, you can email us at the USAV show at usav.org. Again, leave us feedback on pronunciation, feedback about the show, feedback about everything. Just let us know how we're doing about any future topics and any of those that you would like to hear about. Remember, new episodes drop every other week. And I'm just going to drop this in before you kind of go on your hiatus. But I think we're overdue for a new promo.
Oh, yes.
I think we're overdue for a new promo. We got to start getting some
some ideas out there.
Get the ideas flowing. Start brainstorming. I still got the plan. Some good old Denver tattered cover on my whiteboard here. You might have to actually execute it this time and see where that goes from there.
We are overdue for a promo. Yeah, I like that. All right. Put that on the to-do list.
All right.
For sure.
Bam. Not going to forget it. But until next time, thank you all for listening to episode number 71 of the USA Volleyball Show. We're the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence. Terrence Hughes and Stephen Munson. Produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.